by, and they met us. Of course, they treated us, you know, the red carpet every place we went. Mm-hmm. When we flew first class, and they took care of all the everything. We were met in Shanghai and went to Nanjing, and there they had the 60th anniversary of the Jiangsu Academy of Agricultural Sciences. I was a featured, you know, spoke there. Mm-hmm. And from that was in early June or late May of 1989. And from there we went to Shandu in Sichuan Province to meet, oh, Lu Ping was the one, the former student that invited me to give the first seminar in China.
Okay.
Of course, the other was Hu Xingli, who was at the Zhejiang Agricultural University in Zhejiang Province. But then we went, from Shandu, we went down to Kunming, which is the Yunnan Province next to the Vietnam border. Mm-hmm. And Kunming is the city of eternal spring, and there we're treated royally. I mean, they took us wherever we wanted to go. Went to the Stone Forest, and it was a great time. Maureen was with me, and then next schedule was to go back to Beijing, and then on to Harbin, where they would release the Chinese edition. Well, we got in Kunming, in Yunnan Province, and we left. I think it was. Kind of one day of the week, I think it was Sunday morning. Let's see, the Tiananmen Square debacle occurred, I think, on Friday evening, Saturday, kind of ended up on Sunday in Tiananmen Square with a crackdown. Mm-hmm. Well, when we boarded the plane in Kunming to go to Beijing, there was scarcely anybody on the plane. I said, this never happened before. Hmm. The Chinese airlines, every seat is occupied. What's going on? No idea what. Got in Beijing, had army encampments all around the airport, soldiers. And they got there and things looked a little strange. And the people that were there to meet us, but I'd never seen them before. They weren't any of my friends. Mm-hmm. At least I didn't know them. But they knew us. They got in the car and going to take us to the what they call the Friendship Hotel in the western part of Beijing. Well, on the route, we saw burned out buses, burned out tanks, army trucks, soldiers pulling army trucks by hand out of the city, demolished, and then we got a little further in, got in roadblocks. Almost got hemmed in. Mm-hmm. The drivers are getting worried.
And your wife was with you?
Oh, yes. Second. She had a video camera with her. Uh-huh. But I said, Martin, don't use it. Mm-hmm. I said, we might not get out of here.
That's probably good advice.
We did get a video camera shot, though, beautiful, of the student demonstrations in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. We have it vividly shown in the video. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. We were parked there, and this happened all at once, and we happened to be right where they do. When the parade was right alongside, she photographed everything. Mm-hmm. The students, mm-hmm. demonstrating with their banners.
And you were able to see that, you know.
Well, nobody really knew we had it. Uh-huh. We just kept it. Mm-hmm. And I think the Chinese would love to have it because they could have some of the people. Mm-hmm. But we haven't passed that on. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when we got to Beijing, we finally got back to the hotel. And things were pretty rough there. And they got us a place to stay there in the Friendship Hotel. It was sort of a complex. And by this time, we knew something had happened. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what. We kind of figured that, you know, there'd been some crackdown. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how long we were going to be in the hotel, so I went out to the markets along the. I had to buy a little fruit and vegetable, wasn't very much there. Went back to the hotel and I got a telephone call. It was from Mr. Chin and Kong. He says, are you okay? I said, yeah. He said, don't leave the hotel. I said, why not? He said, you'll get shot. Hmm. And so we were in that hotel for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And finally, the vice minister, we got together a little group. We had kind of a little farewell banquet. Next day he arranged and he accompanied us directly to the airport. I'd never seen such a bedlam in my life at an airport, everybody trying to get out. Big mm-hmm. crowd, you couldn't go anyplace. But with him there as the vice minister, he finally took us through and got us at the departure gate. Mm-hmm. And we left. So there was never an occasion of the book of release of the book. Mm-hmm. And I don't even have a copy of the Chinese edition now. I think I left those copies at the University of Utah. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, contact had been made with the Japanese through my friend Mr. Shao Wikwan, had called the Japanese, told them we were coming to Tokyo and to meet us. And the reason for that was that I had made a previous arrangement to meet with about three or four Japanese professors in the language department at the University of Tokyo to go over their translation of the Feeding of Bidden and to have it in Japanese. Mm-hmm. And so we spent about three or four days with the Japanese going over, answering the questions they asked me about the book and their translation. Mm-hmm. And this is the product of the
Japanese. This is the Japanese translation?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how many copies of that were ever published? Mm-hmm. The price, I think, was atrocious, around maybe $60 or $70. Uh-huh. But I heard nothing about, you know, didn't ask about it, mm-hmm. you know, any royalty or anything. Mm-hmm. But the Chinese did a wonderful job. The reproductions here are beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The Japanese?
The Japanese. Uh-huh. They put all the photographs at the front. Mm-hmm. They did a tremendous job.
Oh, yes. Did you take a lot of those photos yourself?
I took them all.
Oh, you did?
I didn't have anybody to take along as a photographer.
Uh-huh. Did you end up, when you came back from your visits and your work on the book, did you have American audiences for?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Where did you speak?
Well, all over the world.
You did?
I spoke in Mexico. I spoke in almost every state in the nation. I have given talks in every state in the United States. In some states, such as Michigan, Illinois, Florida, Texas, California, Arizona, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Utah, and Washington, and New Jersey. I've given talks several times. Alaska, I've given talks several times. Hawaii, I've given talks several times. Now, they weren't all on China, mm-hmm. but they were slide presentations that I was in Tokyo in 1983 in September to speak at the Second World Conference on Animal Agriculture. At the hotel there, was absolutely packed. We had the projector. I had Larry Marshall there. Larry Marshall is a very interesting person. Are you still around or not? Mm-hmm. But he was my projectionist for the last three or four years I was there. And it was very good. We really developed a program, mm-hmm. with music and all, with introduction and
really?
And with three projectors.
Mm-hmm. And with the lat dissolved?
Oh yes, tremendous. You know, the difference. They're beautiful effects. But at the International Conference on Animal Agriculture in Tokyo, that place was packed, and the thing that I did not anticipate, the Japanese were there with their cameras, and that screen was just lighted up with flash people all the time. And I didn't expect that. They wanted to flash every picture, every slide I saw.
They were stealing your photographs.
I didn't expect that. Mm-hmm. I've had some interesting experiences, mm-hmm. especially in some of the presentations and going to some institution, Minnesota, for example, and with some of these large groups. I gave the specific requirements of the equipment I wanted, the projectors I needed, and also an experienced projectionist. It never happened in any place. It never happened. I finally decided, mm-hmm. from now on, and this was two or three years before I quit giving those speeches, I'm not going to accept an assignment without taking my own equipment and my own projectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for the past 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost had some disasters. In Minnesota, the guy showed up 5 minutes before I was to speak, and then dumped all my slides.
Oh, no.
I said, just put them in any way you want to. And I'll speak it according to what you put down.
Put on. You let him set the serendipity, set the program.
Oh, I could give you. And that's all through my history.
Did you speak in the Soviet Union?
Yes, I've been there 3 times.
Uh-huh. How were, what
in
were those circumstances?
All during the Cold War. In 1985, I was invited specially. I'm one of 2 foreign members of the A.I. Lenin All-Union Academy of Agricultural Sciences.
How do you think?
One of 2 Americans ever mm-hmm. elected to that society.
And who was the other one?
It was a fellow from Illinois, a professor from Illinois. Okay. He's now deceased. He's a plant breeder.
Mm-hmm. How was it that you think you first were invited?
Well,
or based
the
on what research
happened that
you
there
done?
Was that I went there. The first thing that happened was there was a fellow by the name of Yuri Mortinov, who was an agricultural engineer, came to Michigan State University as an invited guest from the Soviet Union, along in about 1970. I took Yuri Mortinov, although he was invited by the agricultural engineers, but as director of the experiment stand, took him around Michigan. I showed him some things about Michigan agriculture. And that was the first contact. And then I told Yuri, I said, if I come to USSR, that was in the Cold War, he said, I would like you to do the same for me about Soviet agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went with the People and People's Tour there in 1972. And this is a group from Michigan. Michigan agricultural people. It was organized by someone, agricultural economics. What was his name? John, my name, slipped in my mind. But anyway, when we were there, we made contact with Yuri Mortinov. And he was director of a large research unit having to do with medicinal plants. In China and in Russia, they spent a great deal of effort in terms of medicinal plants, growing them
mm-hmm.
for medicinal purposes. That was Yuri's position. So when he met us there, and he says, we were there for 2 or 3 days with the tour group, people-to-people tour, and Yuri said one day, tomorrow or tonight, I'm coming to see you with Mrs. Whitman. We see Moscow by night. And we did.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, as we were in one of the streets, a whistle was blowing. Now, the police in the USSR use whistles, not guns. But when you whistle, you stop.
Mm-hmm.
And Yuri stopped and explained, and I guess, who was with him, you know, what is he doing? Well, next day I take you to the ancient city of Zagorsk. Now, Zagorsk is the ancient cathedral city. Mm-hmm. It's about 90 miles north of Moscow. Now, very few people have been in Zagorsk, but they have the most beautiful cathedrals there that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, sure enough, Yuri came along with his corps, and we departed for Zagorsk. Meanwhile, I take my camera along. I see many things to take to photograph. I see a very large power plant with greenhouses attached, and I take a picture of that. In the Soviet Union, instead of having lawns, they grow potatoes in their front yard. And that was interesting. I took a photograph of that, with many other pictures. Went to Zagorsk, took pictures of the cathedrals, and there were many tour buses there. And Maureen, my wife, was with me, and she looked at all the tour buses. I said, yes, there's not a one from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They're all Russian tour buses. And on the way back, we were stopped at one of the checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Police there blew his whistle, And Yuri gets out and talks to them, and after a long time comes back. Meanwhile, we were sitting in the car. Long face, he says, they want documents. I says, Yuri, all our documents are at the hotel. We have no documents. He goes back. Come back after that long stay. We were sweating out. We were out where we shouldn't be.
You thought your stay might be a little longer than you anticipated.
But anyway, my wife could verify all of this. You know. And then he come back. And yeah, I says, Yuri, everything okay? Well, he says, yeah. But he says, they say, strange kind of tourist I got with me, taking pictures of all the things that we'd taken pictures of. And he says, more pictures? And I said, no, Yuri, get back to Moscow. Well, we've been back to Moscow 4 times since then, but never seen Yuri. Uh-huh. We've called him. Uh-huh. He knows we've been there. We've never been able to make contact.
Oh, I see.
Well, the last time I was there was in 1985, mm-hmm. which was still a part of, still during the Cold War. Mm-hmm. See, the wall didn't go down until 89. And I was invited back. This was the second or third time. Well, in the meantime, I had this people-to-people tour, and then I'd become involved through my friend, Tom Malone, who was president of university in Indianapolis, Butler University. Tom gets acquainted with me at the national meetings of the National Research Council, National Academy of Sciences, and the Commission on Natural Resources, Environmental Resources, which John Cantlin was also a member. And I, being chairman of the Board on Agriculture, I met with the Environmental Resources Group. So that's where John and I always canceled out each other. Mm-hmm. He was an environmentalist.
You came at it from different, different angles.
Exactly. But so I know John. We know John in a very interesting way. But anyway, I got involved with that group. And Tom Malone one time called me up. It was on a Thursday. He said, Sylvan, he said, there's an important meeting in Washington, I want you to attend, having to do with the Dartmouth conferences. I had no idea what the Dartmouth conferences were. He said, I know it's a Saturday, it's an imposition to ask you to be there, but could you come? And so I went, and there's where I got in a real conflict with another environmentalist, George Woodwell, and at that meeting. And I was really on the defensive. But the one little fellow in the back there, in the audience, who came to my defense, I had no idea who it was. And so when I asked Tom Malone, I said, who was that fellow back there that was my friend? Which is, that was John Culler, president of the Charles F. Kettering Foundation, Yellow Springs, Ohio. So I sat down and wrote John a letter. I wrote Bob Collar a letter and thanked him. I said, I appreciate your comment. Well, he wrote back. He said, would you come down to Kettering? We want you to give a seminar. And so we went down to Kettering, an invitation, and there I met Marvin Lomberg. Marvin Lomberg. And the other had people in the research division there at Yellow Springs, Ohio. See, Charles F. Kettering was wanted to know what the little green engines were that made plants grow. Well, Marvin Lomberg. And then he comes back to the Dartmouth conferences. Bob Collar was one of the prime promoters of the Dartmouth conference. Now, the Dartmouth conferences were set up as sort of a pugwash group to alleviate détente with the Soviet Union.
Oh, really?
U.S. versus the non-official scientists getting together to see if we couldn't alleviate some of the tensions. Well, Bob Collar was a member of the Dartmouth conferences. Tom Malone was a member of the Dark Knight Conferences. Cousins, Norman Cousins, editor of Saturday of the Norman Cousins, editor of the Saturday Evening Post, was a member. David Rockefeller, president of National Chase Manhattan Bank, a member of the Dartmouth Conferences. Well, as a result of this, I got invited to participate in the Dartmouth Conferences. Now, the Dartmouth Conferences were held in the Soviet Union one year, in the United States the next year, alternating. And then, so in 1970, about 1975, I was invited to go to Moscow to attend, participate, a member of the Dartmouth Conferences, along with these other. Next year, it was in Virginia. What is the famous place in Virginia?
Greenbrier?
No.
At a university?
No, it was pardon? Williamsburg.
Okay. Oh, Williamsburg.
Okay. Colonial Williamsburg.
Yes. Okay.
And in Jūrmala in Latvia, I was there, and the Soviets were there. Now, who were the Soviets? Well, there was Georgi Zhukov, who was a member of the Supreme Soviet. There was Georgi Arbortov, who was president of the a fictional institution that operated in Canada and the United States, and it was a chief spy, really, of the Soviets in the United States. Mm-hmm. And Boris Yunov, Minister of Agriculture, and some other very notable people. And we were there, and I happened to be there, and then they informed me in one of these meetings that I was to be elected as a foreign member of their academy, and that I would be part of the Soviet embassy in Washington and receive the recognition at the embassy, which I did, along with my wife. And so we had the kind of the red carpet laid out for us from then on. Then in 1985, I'm not sure what year it was. It was the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the A.I. Leninol Union Academy of Agricultural Sciences, Vajnil, they called it. And so I was invited to come to Moscow, and it was in December 1976, I'm not sure, as an invited member of that foreign member of that academy. And I was met at the airport, given the red carpet treatment, taken through customs, and invited to attend the honor of the red flag or something, which was, you know, it was held in the Presidium, the big convention hall there, on Red Square, and I was introduced immediately to my interpreter, who was Nina Bogdanova. Nina Bogdanova was the chief librarian of the University of Moscow Libraries. Mm-hmm. And she was a soldier in the Second World War and met the Americans at the Elbe.
Amazing.
She was an interpreter. Mm-hmm. She knew English. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I was in the company of Nina Bogdanova to look after me, take me to the circuses and the ballets or whatever they have there, which you went to all of them, and to be my constant companion, an interpreter and a translator. And So we attended the big meeting, which was held there in Moscow, and Mikhail Gorbachev was the Minister of Agriculture at that time. And he was a very powerful speaker. I remember that. I was introduced to him personally. And then I was the only American that was there, and the only one who was not a member of the so-called socialist group. I mean, there were representatives from Poland, Vietnam, Siberia, Cuba, you know, the whole Yugoslavia,
and you were the only American.
Only American, and the only one who was from a non-communist controlled unit. And then they said they wanted me to speak. And I said, well, what about? And how long? And they says, as you wish. That's a true story.
So how long did you speak?
Well, I have a picture of myself in my history.
Oh, really?
Speaking to that group with Nina Bogdanov at my side to interpret what I said. I can't remember, but I did have with me. I had with me a copy of the proceedings of the first International Agriculture Conference on Crop Productivity. I had a copy of another book that I was co-author of, which I don't have. I think I gave him a copy of the Carmendel lecture that I gave in India. And, well, the other, and I mentioned that the other, of course, were, I think the one of from Vietnam was a picture of Ho Chi Minh, you know, a portrait, you know, that kind of stuff. But I personally handed to Gorbachev my books.
Interesting.
I didn't know, really, at the time, but when I went back in 1985, he said to me, the Soviet, that's the last time I was there, because the ALN, the Union Academy of Agricultural Sciences, no longer exists. It's out. But anyway.
So you met Gorbachev later?
Only that time.
Okay.
Only on the, in 1975,
exactly.
When he was the Minister of Agriculture. But anyway, when I went back, they said, we don't know whether you knew it or not, but when you were here, you met Gorbachev. Huh. Well, let's say the I'm getting too long here, but
What was it about your research do you think that maybe brought about the initial?
Well, of course, I had a knowledge of somewhat of China at that time too. And I had a pretty good knowledge of research priority in the United States. I had a pretty good knowledge of and the world. See, in the meantime, I'd traveled to the International Agriculture Research Centers. I'd been in India 3 or 4 times. I'd been in Egypt. I'd been in Ethiopia. And the International Agriculture Research Centers were in the Philippines, in Mexico City, in Ethiopia, in Kenya, Nigeria, and let's see, the Rice Center, Beach Center, and I had been there. See, I knew what was going on in agricultural research, and I knew agricultural research. I knew research priorities.
Could you talk a little bit about not just your travels, but the world recognition of Michigan State? I mean, did you have to tell people about it, or did they recognize the university for its research in agriculture or other areas? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Michigan State University, of course, is well known as far as its agricultural contributions is concerned. Michigan State University was forward as a university dealing with international programs through the efforts of Glenn Taggart and Ralph Smuckler. Is Ralph still around?
Yes, I interviewed him at the end of September of this year.
Have you interviewed, Glenn Taggart's dead. But through John Hanna, Michigan State University was known worldwide. And certainly to some extent, it's agriculture. Michigan has very diversified agriculture. I guess you know that. And it's leadership in agricultural economics and in agricultural engineering and in horticulture, in the crops area, is well known. I mean, the first hybrid corn was pretty much a result of efforts of Michigan State University, John Beale, with what his name, Beale, what, I don't know if that's right or not, Beale was the last name. Mm-hmm. And the longevity of weed seeds, which I think is still in, underway, mm-hmm. there's some things that...
Yes, they planted, they kept those.
Yeah.
They just opened some up, I think, recently in the last year or so.
Horticulturally, Michigan State University is known worldwide. Tookie was the head of the president of the International Horticultural Society, for example. But I would say that it was the international dimension that was really initiated by John Hanna that put Michigan State on the map with respect to with the International Agricultural Research Centers. McPherson, of course, himself, with the USAID program, an aid, U.S. aid in terms of agricultural development, always been a key mover in far as Michigan State's concerned. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of the universities is more prominently known for its international efforts than Michigan mm-hmm. State. Yeah.
So when you would go overseas,
I had contacts.
And so you had contacts, and these were
Michigan State University contacts.